And now, Glyn Worsnip interrupts your Christmas evening to suggest that Christmas isn't what it was. As he says, it never used to be quite like this, did it?
Come and have a great time at our store this Christmas, from the basement to Santa's chimney top,
going
on the 28th floor. There are sacks of fun. Christmas discounts on household furnishings and electrical goods, plus 16 floors of Christmas gifts, with 10 floors of computer games, and special Christmas Day free instant camera with every computer or video purchase over £500. Our store is Christmas.
There you are, you see. Christmas isn't what it used to be. It's too commercial. Everybody says so.
Oh, it has changed a lot, really.
In what way?
It's more commercialised now than it used to be.
It's very commercialised now, I think.
I wonder if people didn't always say that.
I don't think so.
Do you think Christmas has changed over the years in your lifetime?
Yes, quite a lot.
How?
It's become very commercial.
And not just commercial, but vulgar and nasty. But then, who are we at the BBC to complain when you think of some of the stuff we broadcast?
I'm only a poor little turkey.
Gobble, gobble.
I live on a big turkey farm.
Gobble, 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 gobble.
The social life's great. I've got lots of mates. And the shed that we sleep in is warm.
Quite nice.
I'm only a poor little turkey.
Gobble, gobble.
I live on a big turkey farm.
Gobble, 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 gobble.
Our farmer is good. And he gives us our food. And I don't think he'd do us no harm.
Not much.
He's only a poor little turkey. Gobble, gobble. And Christmas is coming quite soon.
What's Christmas?
Oh, dear. I'm sorry if that disturbed you, either because you were dozing or because it made you wonder what happened to Christmas as it was, is not now, and never shall be. To make up, let me offer you a few minutes of Christmas as it ought to be.
The best of the Christmas celebration is the carol singing on Christmas Eve. This year, Christmas Eve came cold. Frost lay hard as iron. The gutters and taps hung with icicles like sugar sticks. Our breaths plumed out on the air. Our footsteps rang, the stars prickled. Behind closed doors and curtained windows, in firelight and lamplight, people waited. The singers arrived, and there was much blowing on hands and stamping and sucking of those red winter cough drops that smell of paraffin and cloves. And we were off. First to the corner of the old manor house, and by the almshouses, down as far as old Miss Reaver's, whose dog barked, though she herself gave no sign that she had heard us. Back up the lanes, marching hard, laughing and chatting, joined on the way by latecomers and various children. We sang, "O Come All Ye Faithful" at the Fox and Feathers, under their 10-foot-high, lighted Christmas tree. We wished a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to 93-year-old Mr. Stump, who adjusted his hearing aid up and down, and got his wife, who is 97, to stand on a chair and open the window wide. Then we greeted a new baby at Fen Farm with a way and a manger. The church clock struck 10. Some of the children were taken home. It was colder still, too cold for snow. We were glad to get to the manor house again and pile into the hall in the old way for mince pies and sausage rolls and punch and the blaze of the fire on our frozen faces. The lights went out, except for those of the tree. Silent night, which brings tears to the eyes. A second or two of absolute silence before the bursting of a log, up like a firework and down again in a great golden shower of sparks. Laughter and lights again, and a happy Christmas, and a happy Christmas, floating faint on the freezing air, down all the lanes and home.
Now that was Christmas as it was in the good old days, wasn't it? Well, no, it wasn't. That was Christmas in England in the 1980s, as seen through the eyes of an author of less than 40 winters, Susan Hill. Perhaps then, not all the received wisdoms about our modern lack of joy, lack of peace, lack of faith, lack of Christmas spirit stand up to scrutiny either. Indeed, the whole concept of the traditional Christmas is as full of holes as a pudding is of, well, I was going to say plums, but even they have disappeared. After all, for the first 200 years of Christianity, nobody celebrated Christmas at all, and when they finally did, it was in Egypt and in May. We took the winter festival and the giving of presents from the Romans, mistletoe from the Druids, stockings from the Americans, and the Christmas tree from Prince Albert in about 1840. Our Parliament made Christmas illegal in 1644, though the appetite was restored with Charles II. It was the Victorians who boxed and gift-wrapped it all, added a sprinkling of snow, a sprig of holly, a sancti-parsimonious portion of charitable mince piety, and printed it all on a Christmas card. And there it sat, an embossed legend in more senses than one, reading, God rest ye merry, gentlemen. But the accent was very much on the gentlemen, and of course, the ladies.
Those were the days of size and space. Large families and large houses which could hold them and all they loved in a wide, welcoming embrace. There was the secret planning and getting of presents for other people. It was a grief to us that our totalitarian German governess never allowed us to buy presents for our parents. In vain we argued as we toiled that neither my father nor my stepmother had ever wiped a pen or held a kettle in their lives. At last, the great day came when we left London. To have spent Christmas in London would have been unthinkable. We rumbled to the station in a private bus, piled high with luggage, vast trunks like Noah's Arks, the first stage of our journey to the country, to the house we loved, full of the happy noise and litter of a family. Our belief in Santa Claus was absolute. Long before breakfast, we were up, touring the passages in flannel dressing gowns to sing our Christmas hymns outside the grown-up's bedroom door, our quavering trebles helped out by the housemaids. Now into our best clothes and off to church across a frosty park, Grandpapa carrying in his hand a tiny leather bag chock full of golden sovereigns, which he gave to everyone, stranger or friend, we chanced to meet upon our way. I remember once creeping unseen into the empty dining room in which the Christmas feast was spread, and seeing there the butler, alone. He was gazing at his sideboard in a rapt trance of contemplation. The curved and varnished tongues, frilled hams, pheasants and partridges in pairs, Stilton and cheddar truckle cheeses. And I overheard the cri du coeur which broke from him. What a beautiful sideboard, he murmured to himself. It was the pure emotion of an artist, hailing a masterpiece of his own making.
Lady Violet Bonham Carter, with the Christmas to which many aspired, but few were called. Then, as now, Christmas was celebrated by each according to his abilities. That hasn't changed. What has changed is the length of the workers' holiday and the number of people besides Santa Claus who actually worked on Christmas Day.
I was always one of the unlucky ones. And do you know, I had 13 Christmases on the job without a break. Christmas and Good Friday, well, they were the only two holidays given us. Both these days used to be treated as Sundays, which to the duty man, well, it was a bit harder than the ordinary days. Out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, round of the thermometer to take the temperature, and then through the other houses, finishing up with the fires. And on most estates, Christmas was a time for family parties, and the dining table decorations fell to the duty man. Often it was traced with single holly leaves and berries round each guest's plate and a design in the centre. Then single blooms of Christmas roses were perhaps placed, some 5 inches apart along the leaves, with coloured bonbons at intervals for everyone. Then back to the garden. And it was a funny thing, the duty man was seldom thought of from the house. The gardener's wife, well, she used to send down his dinner sometimes if she was a decent sort, and this was gratefully received. Now, was it worth it? Of course it was. But I can't see many of them doing it today. Well, good night.
Fred Streeter, making you proud to be British. But despite that uncertainty as to whether he would get his Christmas dinner, his good old Victorian Christmas sounded very homely and comfortable. Or was it only those who reinforced that myth who got to broadcast?
It is Christmas Day in the workhouse, and the cold, bare walls are bright with garlands of green and holly, and the place is a pleasant sight. For with clean washed hands and faces in a long and hungry line, the paupers sit at the tables, for this is the hour they dine. And the guardians and their ladies, although the wind is east, have come in their furs and wrappers to watch their charges feast. To smile and be condescending, put pudding on pauper plates, to be hosts at the workhouse banquet they've paid for with the rates. Oh, the paupers are meek and lowly, with their thanky kindly mums. So long as they fill their stomachs, what matter it whence it comes? But one of the old men mutters and pushes his plate aside. Great God, he cries, but it chokes me, for this is the day she died. Last winter, my wife lay dying, starved in a filthy den. I have never been to the parish. I came to the parish then. I swallowed my pride in coming, for ere the ruin came, I held up my head as a traitor, and I bore a spotless name. I came to the parish craving bread for a starving wife, bread for the woman who'd loved me through 50 years of my life. And what do you think they told me, mocking my awful grief? That the house was open to us, but they wouldn't give out relief.
Charity on Christmas Day. That's changed a little. But like all the changes I've mentioned, it's a change not in people's attitude to Christmas, but in social conditions. So, by the 20s and 30s, many more of the middle and lower middle classes were finding themselves able to adopt the mantle of the Victorian upper middle classes. Ignoring the surrounding general depression, they approached Christmas with a brittle elation, at least to judge from advertisements in publications which still weren't quite clear whether they were ladies or women's magazines.
If you are spending Christmas in the country and have a barn at your disposal, it is rather an amusing idea to have a cabaret. Put small tables round the four sides of the room and leave a generous space in the middle clear for dancing. See to it that the floor is as smooth as possible. The simplest way to wax your floor is to scatter the savings of a candle around and then slide on the floor.
The Christmas before last, Colin's family came to us, and I nearly died. I rushed about all over the place and never rested at all. Then, last year, we went to spend Christmas with the Bretts, and I discovered that Mrs. Brett wangled things so that she didn't really get tired at all. She's had her kitchen table lowered by sawing off a few inches from the legs, and she's got herself into the habit of sitting down for cleaning silver and for any of the 1,001 jobs she has to do. It's a grand idea, and you'll find yourself not half so tired after the inevitable Christmas rush if you adopt the scheme. How about asking your husband to attack the kitchen table tonight?
Quite so. By this time, of course, the wonder of the wireless was also keeping watch and ward on the nation's morals. But in its attitude to Christmas, it trod a delicate tightrope between the old feudal Christmas and something altogether new. It was now permitted to the right sort of middle-class person to be almost facetious about Christmas.
Like everybody else, I ought to write letters. So far, I haven't thought out a formula for my letter to Miss Mugg. Dear Miss Mugg, I might begin. How very kind of you to send me the marmalade pot, and to choose one made like the head of a little nigger boy with a top hat for a lid. Or shall I simply say that the thought is what really counts in a Christmas present? Though really, if Miss Mugg thinks, after knowing me all these years, that I like that kind of china on my table, all I can say is that she ought to be shot. I'm not ungrateful, and I like Miss Mugg in her way. And I know it's very nice of her to have remembered me every Christmas for 15 years, but I do feel she ought to be shot. That's all. Only just that, shot.
Oh, dear. And was that in its time really any more delicate or tasteful than the song about shooting the turkey? After all, turkeys we do shoot. Incidentally, may I remind those who look back nostalgically 50 years to the time when there were no punk popsters and electrified pantomimes that they too had their counterparts, as witness this advertisement from the Christmas edition of Radio Times, 1929.
This ultra-British pantomime deserves a boost in better rhyme. Here's no imported plugged libretto from Negroid swamps or New York's ghetto. Hence ye sloppy sunny boys, hence ye red-hot mama's joys. Don't let hard-boiled Hannah scream songs, balk those squawky-talky fiend songs, swat that sob stuff, let's be skittish, and above all, let's be British. So, salute the homegrown cellar, list to Longstaff's Cinderella.
By the mid-30s, then, a real change had occurred. Decent people were permitted to complain publicly about Christmas, or rather, about the changes that it had occurred to them had occurred to it. That has remained unchanged to this day. The 1935 Christmas edition of Radio Times contained two such carping articles by middle-class moaners. One was called Christmas Present Rubbish by Mr. Filson Young, a man as mean as a thin moustache, denouncing all calendars and almanacs and the business of the Christmas present as a menace to one's ordinary peace of mind. Then, a few pages on, Sir Richard Terry asked, "What has happened to Christmas?"
The old Christmas myths have gone. Santa Claus has returned to Saxe-Coburg or Gotha or wherever the Prince Consort brought him from. The Christmas ghost story, too, either leaves the nursery coldly critical or, at its most creepy moment, provokes hoots of laughter at the idiocy of the adult who expects any self-respecting nursery to believe it. We have abolished the old domestic family gathering. We spend our Christmases dancing at seaside hotels or staying in town and foxtrotting at a palatial town hotel. But we danced at the old family reunions, too, and I'd eat my hat if we didn't get more fun out of it. We have abolished, more or less, the old Christmas pantomime. We are trying to freeze out Handel's Messiah, without which no Christmas used to be complete.
The Messiah, which yet again this year is part of the BBC Christmas holiday programme. How wrong can you get? Well, as wrong as Sir Richard also was about the disappearance of Santa Claus, ghost stories, domestic family gatherings, and pantomime. Now, I'm not trying to suggest that there aren't some festive traditions which aren't on the wane. Mummers, for example, aren't as thick on the ground as once they were.
They started round to the big farms and all the big houses. That was the start of the first English theatre. They got on a little few years later and they called herself Wiltshire Mummers. Well, St. George, after he fought the night, when they'd finished up and Father Christmas had blessed the reign of peace, that was taken from the Bible, before Johnny Jack come in, St. George walked on the stage and he wanted something for his valour. Father Christmas turned round, he said, "My boy," he said, "the only woman that I can give you," he said, "is a woman that you saved from the dragon." And the lady come in. And the Father Christmas marries the St. George. That ends the play. That's an old book that's nearly forgot. But I do know this, sir, that the police tried to stop me when I was out come up here to a concert. And the police got in my way and I told them. I said, "Well," I said, "I got an old book but it's been destroyed now. But English mummers can act in the streets of England from the 4th of December to the 6th of January, old Christmas Day. And they can take money without the police interfering. So long as they give every pound they got, they give a shilling to charity. That is the charm."
And things don't change. The purveyors of the replacement forms of Christmas entertainment encounter similar difficulties.
Now we'll try another gentleman, a tall gentleman who's standing next to me. How are you going to spend your Christmas?
Working.
Working?
Yes.
Well, that's a bad thing for a start, isn't it? You're going to be on duty all the time?
Yes,
What is your duty?
I happen to be the police inspector.
You're a police inspector?
Yes, yes.
Well, I ought to warn you that anything you say will be taken down, altered, and used in evidence against you.
And I ought to warn you that you want to get busy and get this crowd out of the road, because we've got some work to do.
Well, I'm sorry about that. It'll be over.
Don't be too
minutes.
Long, will you?
Just for about another 3 minutes.
Yes, well...
But now, tell me, are you going to be on duty all the time? Are you married?
I don't know. Oh, yes, I'm married, yes.
You said that rather reluctantly.
Yes, well...
Do you think your wife is listening to this?
Well, I hope not, anyway. But you get this crowd out of the road. That's all I want.
Michael Standing in 1938. And I must also point out that the old mummer's tradition of telling a good tale was fully maintained by the new entertainers who began to invade people's homes at Christmas, though without getting a glass of mulled wine.
Who's in town for Christmas? The first are Joan and Peggy Webster, two young women who've been travelling in the real Father Christmas style. Here they are with Lionel Gamlin to tell you about their journeys through Lapland with reindeer and sleigh.
You know, whenever I see those pictures of Father Christmas sailing gaily along behind a team of reindeer, I always think of the reality.
Oh, and what's that? You're not going to disillusion us about reindeer at Christmas time, I hope.
Well, driving them is a bit of a problem, as you have only a single rein attached to the animal's antlers.
Yes, but Father Christmas seems to manage them quite well.
I don't know how he does it. Talk about mules being opposite, reindeer can take all the prizes. If the sleigh happens to run a little too fast and catches up with the animal, he gets very fractious. He has a nasty habit of tipping you into the snow. Do you remember, Peggy, that other time when we were travelling by night and that vast herd of reindeer stampeded across the track?
I certainly do. I was almost asleep at the time and woke up suddenly to find my own reindeer dashing wildly after the other animals towards the lake.
But the blizzard, ooh.
Yes, and there was no Father Christmas with his sleigh to drive us. We had to go on foot.
Another broadcasting tradition was the annual fireside chat from the Minister for Christmas, the Postmaster General.
Good evening. I am doing this evening what my predecessors have always done about this time, and that is to ask you to help the post office to do a good job with the Christmas traffic. It's the old story. Post early. On Christmas Day itself, do spare the telephone and telegraph operators if you can, so that as many as possible of them may spend the day with their families, and those who have to be on duty may be able to handle urgent calls and telegrams without delay. And now may I wish you all, those who post, those who receive, and those who deliver, a very happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year.
A chat from the Postmaster General. Now there's a tradition we've lost, along with Postmaster Generals and telegrams. And I wonder how many of you had a visit from the postman this morning. No one? Ah, well. Some other British Christmas customs, such as family arguments and drunkenness, now much highlighted, weren't so much not there in those post-war days as not emphasised, except by accident in live broadcasts.
Well, what, your name?
Charlie Cuffley.
Well, Charlie, this is going to be a better Christmas
yes,
than the last one.
Yes, it certainly is.
What are you looking forward to most?
Drinking myself underneath the table.
Thus maintaining a tradition as alive today as it was not only 30 or more years ago when that was broadcast, but 300 or more years ago when Hezekiah Wood called Christmas
a day of drunkenness and wantonness on which men serve the devil so devoutly at that time that they cannot cease from his worship no more than he or they can cease from sin all the year after.
But despite the counter-attractions of gluttony, gifts, or even godliness, it's the family get-together which appears to be the first impulse of Christmas, as much today as ever it was.
Tell me, madam, what Christmas means to you.
Family and friendship and chestnuts. Families getting together.
It's just a time for everybody to get together and see people you've never seen before, for a long time maybe. It's nice. It's sort of a mecca of everybody meeting and... pleased to see each other, we hope, anyway.
I expect I'll spend it with the family. You know, that's how one usually seems to spend it. I don't know why.
Well, it means staying at home with my family and having my married children coming home for the day with their children.
Is that the most important thing about it?
It
as far
is
as
the
you're
most
concerned?
Important.
In 1932, families all over Britain, well, 20,000 in all, settled down round their wirelesses to improve on that tradition, listening to Her Majesty, or His Majesty as she then was, broadcasting to his own national, nay, as wireless expanded to accommodate the Empire, global family. A family reunion, said the Morning Post, on a scale terrene. With the aid of television, over 20 million people still do it. And, again improving on tradition, broadcasting meant that if you couldn't gather round the piano with your loved ones, you could gather round your receiver and enjoy others gathering round the piano with their loved ones.
Well, this next little song is to introduce this little lady who is my mother. Mother and I are going to sing a little song that I used to sing when I was a little kid, and we didn't have a piano because we couldn't afford one in those days, so I used to make funny noises and make banjo fancy noises, and I used to do the banjo noises to Mother singing Old Folks at Home.
Way down upon the Suwannee River, far, far away, there's where my heart is turning, never, there's where the old folks stray.
Ah, well, today it's Val Dunican, but pre-recorded. But back in 1957, we'd never had it so good, as the global family, not now in the Empire, but at least in the Commonwealth, were reminded live on this day, a quarter of a century ago, in the BBC's most cathedral tones.
Let's recall moments and memories down the recent years. 1932, when this programme first started and the BBC Empire service began. For most people, in Britain at any rate, it was a year of depression, a year when little groups of unemployed stood dejectedly at street corners. And who'd ever forget the unemployed Welsh miners singing their way through the streets? And here's "O Come All Ye Faithful" again, not in Westminster Abbey this time, but as they sang it then.
I think through our activities of years ago, if I may say this, we, old uns, have simply made this country a land of velvet for the youngsters to live in. If you come to look at them days and look at today, why, by God, they're living in clover. Absolute clover.
Yes, things have changed for the better.
Yet another 25 years on, the wheel has come full circle. This year, a survey shows 3 million people haven't been able to afford special Christmas celebrations, although the poverty line is drawn a little higher than it was in the 30s.
I've been unemployed. I find it a bit hard at the moment. Like,
how much difference has that made in terms of what your family can expect?
I should say at least half. That's what they normally get.
What will you eat for Christmas?
Oh, we'll have a chicken there. I won't go without that.
And are the children aware of that it might be different?
I don't think so. You know, they might not get exactly what they wanted, but I don't think it's... as long as they get something. We get them a load of little things, and then it won't make up for the big ones that they don't... that they used to get, though, you know.
Why do you feel you have to celebrate it, especially in difficult circumstances like being unemployed?
It's a tradition, isn't it? Don't have to, but... I just don't know. It's just one of them things, I think.
Suddenly, Christmas is, after all, beginning to reacquire some of those Victorian values. Though, nowadays, people are less inclined to believe in miracles. Not even Christmas miracles. And yet, Christmas still has the power to pack out the churches. The latest poll shows that 38% of people in England went to a service at Christmas. 46% in the northwest, the highest, 29% the lowest in London, where, on the streets paved with golden credit cards, it's surprising how few are prepared to abandon the traditional Christmas, with or without Christianity.
Tell me, sir, what Christmas means to you.
Christmas pudding.
Anything else?
Midnight Mass.
Tell me, madam, what Christmas means to you.
First of all, it's Christ's birthday. We're all celebrating, we're all giving each other presents, but at the heart of it, Christ's Mass. For me.
What does it mean to you, Christmas?
A happy time. And a lot of nice music. Carols, which I like very much, and my wife. And a real pleasant time and peaceful. It'll never change, I don't think. It's one of those times that will always be the same.
Tell me, sir, what Christmas means to you.
Christmas. All about Jesus, God. Christmas is Christianity, and it's all about celebrating Christ, and that's all it is to me. I think it's always been traditional for a lot of people to go to church. It annoys me that a lot of people go specially because it's Christmas, with all the tinsel and everything else around, which glosses out the real ideas of Christmas.
Tell me, sir, what Christmas means to you.
Happiness and good cheer.
And is the spirit of Christmas what it was?
I think so. I think television spoils it.
Do you turn it off?
Yes.
Christmas means to me, oh my goodness, having to spend an awful lot of money basically, but I enjoy it. You know, I like all the corny old things about Christmas, all the songs and the tinsel and the angels and the whole bit, you know. And now in a time of recession, I think the kids don't have so many toys and things the rest of the year. Christmas is becoming the occasion again that it used to be in that way.
Tell me, madam, what Christmas means to you.
Just a lot of work and expense. I dread it.
Why do you do it?
Tradition, I suppose. Everybody in the family expects me to.
You do all the work and they get all the pleasure.
I do all the work, yeah. Have all the aged parents and everything else come and stay with us. So it really is a lot of hard work.
When you were a child, was it different?
No, it was very much the same, really. I think my mother used to complain about spending money she could ill afford.
Is this your son?
Yes, it is.
Did you hear what your mother said?
Yes.
And what do you have to say about that?
Rubbish.
Tell me, girls, what Christmas means to you.
I'm asked at parties all night at Christmas.
Oh, yeah, Christmas and Christmas parties.
Christmas parties, that's what we look forward to at Christmas.
Nothing else? No going to church, anything like that?
No, we're not religious. Oh. See, we're sisters.
Tell me, madam, what Christmas means to you.
Work.
Will you be working over Christmas?
Yeah, yeah.
Doing what?
Nursing.
Well, to me, the most important part are the services, and most of our Christmas is actually concentrated around the... on the Christmas festival, so in fact Christmas doesn't begin till Christmas Eve as far as I'm concerned.
In your experience, are more people attending church at Christmas now or less?
My experience has always been of packed churches at Christmas, but that doesn't mean to say that they attend church all the year round. They just don't think it's Christmas if they don't go to church.
Tell me, madam, what Christmas means to you.
Spending an awful lot of money.
Has it changed over the years for you, Christmas?
In what way? What do you mean?
Well,
change?
Got better, got worse, got more hard work, got less hard work.
Oh, obviously it's more hard work, but I think I enjoy it just as much now as I did when I was a child because I see it through their eyes now.
And don't you find it a bore and aggravating and causes quarrels and all the things that people say about it but no one admits to?
No, I don't think so. I think everybody enjoys it in the end. I mean, you know, all the family get together and you say every year, oh, I don't want to go, I don't want the family parties. But I think if we didn't do it, we'd all miss it. Really.
Why do you think we do it then? Is it because of Christ and Christian values and the like?
You're really asking the wrong person there.
I realise.
That's a slight problem.
But then why do you do it, if you're Jewish?
I don't know. I think because...
Because it's fun.
Because it's fun, yes. Yes. I think she's right, because it's fun.
A testimony indeed. So, how much is left of the Victorian Christmas card Christmas? Well, certainly one aspect of it.
From the Daily Telegraph, 8th of December, 1983. Scrooge is alive and well and working in a multi-story car park in Cardiff. Secretary Mary Evans discovered when she returned from a Christmas night out with office friends that her car battery had been stolen. The attendant refused to let her use his phone to call for help. When her husband Dennis eventually arrived with a spare battery after driving 20 miles from their home in Pencoed, the man insisted on charging him admission. And when Mrs. Evans was able at last to leave, she was charged an extra £1.50 for the time she had been stuck.
But like Scrooge, national car parks were converted and reimbursed £2.70. Charity clearly is not dead. No, indeed it isn't. In this respect, Christmas is certainly not what it used to be. Dare I suggest it's improved on what it used to be. Dr. Charles Elliott of Christian Aid.
Very interesting, looking at some old religious periodicals in the 1880s, 1890s, full of fulminations against the middle classes for not being more generous at Christmas. And if anything, our experience is exactly the reverse. Without making a huge effort, we raise about £500,000 a year through our Christmas appeal. And so I would have thought that if anything, the evidence is that actually people are more generous, are more aware of the needs of others now than they were, let's say, 100 years ago. Certainly people are much better informed than they used to be. I mean, that's the great role of television and radio. And it is perfectly true that we, like many other charities, do give people the opportunity to express this sort of generalised concern for those less well off than themselves at this time of year.
Has radio and television, in a sense, replaced the sermon as the inspiration for giving?
That's an interesting thought. I suppose in some ways it has.
Are people giving because they are simply richer?
In one sense, that must be true, but in another sense, you know, it's exactly the reverse of the truth. One of the things that always strikes me, and I must say humbles me sitting here, is an awareness of how much of our income comes from people who can scarcely afford it.
An experience reflected in the letters received by Oxfam's director, Guy Stringer.
I mean, for instance, here's one. It's got a postal order with it. Enclosed is a very small donation for your appeal. £2 is my baby's son's donation. It was meant for his booties. But when I saw the child on TV trying to feed from its mother, I realised that Oliver has so much. Well, here's another one. This is very typical of many we get. It's got a pound note clipped to it. Dear Oxfam, it says. What about that for a start? Best wishes to your work. Sorry I can't do more to help, but I am alone and 92.
Perhaps then what people mean when they say that Christmas isn't what it used to be is that there's a lot more of it about than there used to be. More people capable of giving, more capable of enjoying, more capable of making money from it. Which makes it less exclusive, more vulgar. It's not so much what we're doing or saying they object to, it's the way we're doing and saying it.
A couple of weeks back, I received a letter from a little girl with an air of urgency about it that, well, it certainly required an answer. Her letter said, "Dear Mr. Dean, when they don't believe in things unless they can see them. You can't see the love of your mom and dad, but you know very well that it's there. I'll tell you what, Patricia, let's do this. You imagine that there's a huge door, and behind that door are all the unseen wonders of the world. Now, strength alone won't break down that door. As a matter of fact, a charging army couldn't knock that door down. A small bit of faith is the key to that door, and if you've got that faith, Patricia,
that big door will swing wide open and you'll behold the most beautiful things in life. Santa Claus lives behind that door, Patricia. So, why don't you do this? You try to make your friends understand, and you can tell them this, that old Santa Claus lives forever. And thank goodness he does. 1,000 years from now, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he'll go right on living in the hearts of children throughout the world. No Santa Claus, that's like saying there'll be no more hopes, no more wishes, no more dreams. Little and I've done the best that I could to explain it. But I'll tell you this, no matter what anyone says, Patricia, there is a Santa Claus.
All right, you've had your laugh. But is that really so much more vulgar than the Victorian attitude to Christmas? The style of Christmas may have changed, the content not. What did Lady Violet say?
Christmas is a child's gift to children. And to say or feel about it anything that is real or true, one must borrow back the eyes of a child.
For the adults, it's still a winter concoction of guilt and greed, spirituality and sentimentality, indefinable, indigestible, indispensable. I blame the children, because while my little girl and your little boy and their little grandchildren continue to be told the story that has everything, a miracle, a baby, animals, kings, and kindly shepherds bringing gifts, they'll make sure that we too continue to sing the Christmas songs, whether or not we can still understand the theology or remember the original words.
Way in a manger, no crib for a bed. The little Lord Jesus laid down his sweet head. The stars in the bright sky looked down where he lay. The little Lord Jesus asleep on the head. Asleep on the head.
What does it matter? We're hooked. And that's why Christmas is, and will remain, exactly what it used to be.
Glyn Worsnip, leaving us with all our beliefs and dreams intact. The readers in Christmas Isn't What It Was were Anthony Hyde, Monica Gray and Michael Bilton. The recordings of Christmas Past were from the BBC Sound Archives, and the programme was produced by Helen Fry.